growing up, I couldn't stand. I watched Weird Science recently, and I actually had never watched it all the way through. And it really
good old Danny
was Elfman. Yeah, it was really awful, except for the fact that it had one really funny part to me, which was also extremely racist. I don't know how it got in there, but the part where Anthony Michael Hall is drunk and talking like a black guy, and as he gets drunker and drunker, he progressively talks in higher and higher pitched voice and more and more stereotypical of a black guy.
A high pitched voice is stereotypical.
Oh, no. The way he makes it sound, it's like it's like the 70s version of some jive talking pimp with high voice.
I get you.
And I just don't even know how that got past any sort of producers or anything like that, you know? They just let him do what he wanted?
I think there was a degree of that sort of you could say.
And I laughed because I couldn't believe that it was happening. I laughed because I couldn't believe that it happened.
The civil rights movement was still very young at that point. I mean, it was the 80s, but I mean, you had gone through the 60s.
there was a lot more
racism back then. Yeah. But let's just say there's plenty of racism.
So let's just say right now, John Hughes is racist.
Yeah, fine.
I don't know if that's true. How come there are no black characters in The Breakfast Club? Where are they?
That's a good point.
Where are they? They're all white kids.
I think part of it is he doing the whole writing what he knows thing, and it's about kids that grew up in Michigan or wherever, that sort of white bread.
Yeah, I think it was Illinois, somewhere in Illinois.
Yeah, maybe they make the joke in Dogma.
Yeah, exactly. And I wanted to talk about that, actually, was that after this whole thing is done, I don't like Kevin Smith either, and I can't stand any of his movies. There are a few funny
things. I'll defend Kevin Smith for Devil's Advocate purposes, because I get a kick out of some of his
stuff. You also don't really enjoy, you don't love Kevin Smith.
I don't love too much of too many. I think the only thing I'd say that I will defend tooth and nail is Genndy Tartakovsky, the director of Samurai Jack, because I've liked everything he's done.
Okay.
I mean, he did Dexter first, and I've seen some of those, but I thought they were funny. So,
what if he decided to make a Holocaust musical?
Springtime for Hitler? No, I don't know. I mean, I might not be as interested, but I don't know what that guy's going to do.
Will you follow a certain person, no matter what they make?
You mean, on the net, it's easy. I follow all kinds of people on the net. You know, I check their IMDb, and then if they've got a little blogs, maybe I'll look at it. I wish he did, but he's unfortunately gone kind of, he's gone kind of corporate in the sense that he's like president of the orphanage now, which
Heaven
is a whole
forbid.
Collection of ex-animators from Lucas, and they do all those, like, mostly, you can go to their website, it's pretty cool. But it just makes me feel like he's never going to actually do much actual directing on his own again if he's going to be doing all this administrative work, which I think kind of sucks. But he did direct the first Back to Barbarians. He directed the first episode of Colgorth of Barbaria, the show that they're hopefully going to put on Adult Swim.
Yeah, I'm hoping they do bring that back, actually. It's interesting because that had similar themes, I thought, to Metalocalypse.
A little, yeah, it's just kind of like violent and hardcore.
Yeah, and I think that maybe
there's
something
Norse
about
those.
Yeah,
kind of Viking and kind of Netherlands.
I think because two of their characters are from
they're
supposed to be from, but Iceland or Finland or Norway.
I think they're supposed to be from the Netherlands. Yeah.
So getting back to Ferris Bueller, I watched it a few times as a kid, and I couldn't stand it because even back then I thought it was ridiculous to have a smug character talking to the camera. I don't like Christian Slater movies in the 80s because he did that a lot.
He did that in Cuffs.
And then that stupid pirate one, Pirate Radio one.
Oh, the Pirate Radio one?
A few times. And I think it was just because he was, you know.
It was supposed to be kind of like he's talking to the
radio. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember that one.
I can't stand that. I can't stand the aside to the audience. I think that that's something they teach you never to do. But, of course, then it happens because.
Breaking the fourth wall, exactly. Yeah.
I think that I hated it because of that, and I never really got to the funny things. And I don't enjoy the whole movie. There's certain things though that I think are so subtle in their humor that you can go back and watch them. They're kind of like classic comedy moments. The whole really elongated scene with the principal and what's her name, the lady who was in you know what I'm talking about, the kind of fat older.
Yeah, I know her. She was
she was the voice of
the secretary.
Yeah, she's the voice of Mrs. Duckworth, I think, on DuckTales.
Oh my gosh.
She was in,
that's a reference and a half, Mrs. Duckworth.
Yeah, she was the next door neighbor on
the Hogan
family. Yeah. What was her Edie something her name was. Anyway, so that whole scene where they are trying to figure out whether or not Ferris is behind the fact that his girlfriend is leaving school.
Yeah.
And he, For some reason, I think that it's, that whole thing is so funny. And now, watching it in the past, the guy who plays the principal, his name's totally
that guy was
right
a
now.
Great 80s villain.
Yeah, now he is, you know, he was in the news a couple years ago because they found tons of child porn on his computer.
Oh, my.
That old thing, which I think they did with, like, Pete Townsend or something.
I heard
too,
about that with Townsend. Yeah. I don't know if that ever washed out.
Yeah, I don't know if it did. But
he had some, I was out researching a book argument
or
something.
Yeah, a book on child porn that I was going to write.
Yeah.
But
with Chris Hansen.
I don't know. There's certain things like that. And then there's just strange touches to it that make it really offbeat. And I appreciate more absurd and offbeat humor than I do something like Some Like It Hot, which is just full of one-liners.
Yeah,
like
spit takes and
stuff. Spit takes are pretty good, though.
Spit takes are good. In there's moderation.
Did you watch that show, Extras?
Oh, yeah, I love that
show.
So
there's one episode, I forget which one it was. It might have been the...
Was it Series 1 or Series 2?
It was Series 2. I think it might have been the one with Daniel Radcliffe in it. But
oh, that was funny.
But at the beginning, it shows them... taping When the Whistle Blows.
Oh, yeah.
And
When the Whistle Blows.
And they do this thing where this girl keeps saying things, and he keeps taking sips out of his tea and then spit taking.
That's
it.
Right. It was,
and then finally she says one last thing, and he goes, oh, I'm out, because he'd spit
take like 50 times.
And as I watch that show, I think that I would actually like watching When the Whistle Blows. I think I would watch that show because it's so stupid. I don't know.
Is he having a laugh?
Yeah.
Is he having a laugh?
Oh man,
that was my – did you see the one with Bowie, right?
Yeah, yes.
That was so genius.
You know, I love Ricky Gervais' stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's fantastic after I watch it, but I will leave episodes sitting on my TiVo for –
For months,
because I'm afraid to watch it because I don't like watching people get embarrassed, and everything that happens in shows
so
is so awful for
I know,
these people.
It's rough
so
for me
awful.
To watch
it's
it too.
It's really hard for me to sit through afterwards. I think that's brilliant, but
yeah, no, I mean I don't use that term too often. But the Bowie thing in the series two of Extras is genius because it's what it's like 90% of the Bowie songs are like about something like that,
yeah.
And he walks right into it,
yeah.
And it just like it encapsulates how he feels and the sort of futility of it
right.
all. It's not really mocking him, but it kind of is, and it's kind of like we're all mocking.
That was
him
actually one of the that was one of the few episodes out of the series too that kind of has a resolution where he sort of makes some sort of decision, almost like a movie type thing where he goes back and hangs out with the fans who are super annoying but who liked him.
Exactly.
And he goes out and hangs out with those guys because he wants to.
He's been on all highbrow or whatever.
Anyway, so with Ferris Bueller, there were things like...
The subtle humor. Is
and
the offbeat stuff.
And the really strange things like when they go to Ben Stein and he's speaking
right?
very slow and he keeps saying...
Bueller.
He keeps saying, anyone? Like when he's saying... Is the reason why anyone? Then he says the answer, uh-huh. and then it keeps just cutting to like 5 second long shots of a student slack jawed, staring, and just moments like that are out of the ordinary for the rest of the film. Actually, I think the entire film that doesn't have Matthew Broderick in it is great.
Okay, well
if you took him out, if you just cut together all the pieces that don't have him in a shot or him talking somewhere, I think that's the best movie ever made.
I would like that movie too. My biggest problem with Ferris Bueller, Matthew Broderick.
Okay.
He is a – I don't know how this guy gets work, and I don't mean to be hating on Matthew Broderick, but he's just so fucking low energy.
Well, he was great in
everything
Godzilla.
He does. Oh. Yeah, he was the same – Godzilla, Election, fucking
– You know, I'll defend Election.
The one with the monkey where he's like Project X.
War games.
Everything with Broderick.
Wow.
Just, as that character, he's just always sort of so low energy and sort of uninteresting. And I'm like, you know what? I don't
he's
buy him.
He's kind of effeminate, too.
Yeah, a little
not that there's a problem
it's like
with
I didn't
that,
buy him as being like this hip, cool, like I'm smart and I'm smug guy.
I just don't like characters who are jerks. I just don't like characters who are – I don't like
he,
the smug
he,
thing.
He was
yeah.
a jerk in
yeah.
that movie. Like, he was a jerk to his friend. I liked the friend. I liked the – this. I think
yeah,
the
yeah.
friend's story was more interesting, the whole like resolution with his dad
Alan,
kind of thing.
Alan, whatever his name is.
I don't know, but I know he played the captain of the Enterprise B in Star Trek Generations. And he was on Spin City.
Yeah, Spin City. I liked his Alan Ruck was his name. Yeah,
I
like his role in that. There's actually some really strange parts in the movie where like where he's feeling super bad for himself when he's first sick, laying in bed in the beginning. And for some reason, they have him sing the Let My People Go song.
Uh-huh.
let my camera go.
He's just being
go.
Weird, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there's touches in that where I could see the John Hughes quote unquote genius sort of thing appear.
Yeah.
And that's really the only time I've seen it with a comedy. I enjoy 16 Candles.
I haven't seen that one.
Wait. What's the crappier one? Pretty in Pink, 16 Candles. Which is the one that's all super depressing with her dad and the mom's dead and
I think that's Pretty in Pink.
Okay.
16 Candles.
16 Candles,
the
goofy one, right?
Yeah, where it's like her
yeah.
her grandparents are feeling
yeah,
her up
yeah,
and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
I've
yeah,
seen
that,
bits
that,
and
one, that one's somewhat enjoyable to me a little bit.
Okay.
Though I felt like they just ripped off a lot of Police Academy jokes.
It's possible that they did.
And then there's, of course, the rampant racism. There's racism in that, too. There's a lot of, yeah. John Hughes is David Duke, as far as I'm concerned.
A lot of, when the white people get out of their comfort zone and go hang out at
yeah,
the black
yeah,
nightclub
yeah, yeah.
and then look at this and
yeah.
that. Yeah, that stuff's always kind of lame.
The only sort of comedy where I thought that actually fit was in Animal House because it was set.
It was like they made a point.
Yeah, it was set
that.
In the 50s, I
yeah,
think.
So
right? Yeah,
so time-wise it
exactly,
made a little
yeah.
more sense. Maybe.
And so,
with Amadeus, you know, being all uncomfortable. Amadeus and the guy who played Veer Koto
yeah.
on Babylon 5. Oh, I'm showing my true geek colors with the Babylon 5 reference.
Amadeus was a good movie.
Amadeus was
so,
a good movie.
As for John Hughes and stuff like that, you know, I think that the problem is that it's been built up because people who are making films now, like Kevin Smith, grew up watching Breakfast Club and so forth.
Yeah.
And then this will lead us into the Kevin Smith thing. So in the movie Dogma, Jay and Silent Bob are going on this cross-country trek because they say they want to get to this place in Illinois because all the women are very loose there. Because
exactly.
the John Hughes movies tell them, halfway across the trip, the person tells them that town doesn't exist and that it was just made up for John Hughes' personal opinion of Chicago, wherever he was from, you know.
That's some suburb,
yeah,
Midwest
yeah.
kind of thing. Though Illinois doesn't count as Midwest, really.
And now there is going to be... Kevin Smith stuff is out of the ordinary enough that there is going to be a generation in 10, 15 years that is making stuff with references to Kevin Smith movies, and that bothers me because it's all
Leonardo, New Jersey.
Yeah.
Is that a real place, though?
Yeah, I don't know.
Probably is. I mean,
you know, actually, the only thing I ever truly enjoyed from him was the Clerks cartoon. Did
that
you see
was
it?
Good.
That,
Alec Baldwin.
Someone made me watch it. They're like, "You're gonna like this," and I'm like, "No, I'm not. I hate Kevin Smith. I can't stand it." And the first episode sucked, and every other episode after that was the most side-splittingly funny thing.
The second episode was the clip show, right, where they showed scenes from the episodes that hadn't even
yeah,
aired yet.
Yeah, yeah,
they're stuck in
and
the
they
freezer.
Showed them out of order. They
yeah,
showed,
exactly.
like, the fifth one first or something.
When they did remember seeing them because they came out when I was a freshman in college, and I saw, like, the first two or three on
there was
actual
the,
ABC
yeah.
when they were on TV.
And I think the guy's name was Leonardo Leonardo.
Yeah, Leonardo
that. Yeah.
Leonardo. That was Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, right.
Who's really, like, I don't know, another show I watch now. It's that 30 Rock show.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
He's
I,
really
I like
good
Alec Baldwin,
in that show.
But I don't like Tina Fey. So.
He's funny in that show. So I mean, you probably wouldn't like it then if you don't like Tina Fey stuff. And I don't like some
I think
of
she's
stuff.
Smug, too.
From like, yeah, from the news, she does play kind of smug, but she usually makes fun of herself, too.
Yeah.
So it's not like smug, but no sense of humor about myself.
There was a part in the Clerks cartoon where there was one episode, I don't remember which one it was, but it kept showing them... looking like they were climbing up
yeah,
a wall
yeah,
on a rope.
Yeah. Why are you
walking
this way?
And they kept cutting back to it. They kept. They
that
say, remember when this?
Yeah,
yeah. That was fantastically funny.
That
and
was
they kept
so
showing
funny.
A.
Why are we walking this way?
Yeah. It would show
the
thing crash.
Breaks.
Yeah. I don't know why. I thought that was just hilariously funny. And it was, you know, I mean, you think that a show like that could have been picked up on if it was made now?
Yeah.
That would have been picked up on any of these comedy or Cartoon Networks.
Oh, that'd be on Cartoon. That'd be
yeah.
that would be one that would fit on Comedy
Absolutely.
Central.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You're right. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah, it would fit more on Comedy Central, but it should be. I mean, it's unfortunate.
And because it somehow got a national TV primetime
which is
slot.
It's
ABC
it's the
or something like that.
It's a kiss of death for animation.
Yeah,
unless you're Seth MacFarlane and you get brought back from the dead.
Yeah,
and that was
a real rarity, and sometimes I think it shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
It's much less funny than it used to be.
I think, well, South Park made a pretty big dent in it. made a damn good point about
yeah,
some of them.
Yeah, but I think most people realize that beforehand. The interesting thing is that The Simpsons, you know, it's really not that funny either anymore, but it has this built-in audience now,
yeah.
and they're immune to ratings. I watch it whenever I can still,
yeah.
But they're completely immune to ratings, and I think it's a little too preachy at times. But
Simpsons, you think
yeah,
it's preachy?
Yeah, whenever something revolves around Lisa saying the last words.
Oh, okay.
It's generally true. Some sort of smug thing.
Yeah, Lisa is kind of their, like, yeah.
Yeah, sure. But I think they had some of the best writing
in
any cartoon, and I think that leading to that, a few of their writers went on to, one of them was one of the co-creators of Futurama, but I think Futurama has the best comedic writing of anything I've ever watched, including TV shows.
The most solid
and
the greatest depth is Futurama.
And there were problems with it, too.
But. Oh, sure. There were problems, like, you know, continuity-wise.
Yeah.
It's like I just saw the one about, Bigfoot isn't real. But then, like, 2 days earlier, there was the one about Bigfoot turning 80. And the Bigfoot turning 80 one was probably before the Bigfoot isn't real one.
Yeah.
Because the Bigfoot wasn't real one was the one about the human horn.
Yes.
And that was on, like, last night on
Adult Swim. There's just fantastic humorous writing in it that generally, a lot of times, the jokes don't even come from what's happening in the plot. They'll come from people saying something a certain way.
Yeah.
I don't know, like the one where they all go back in age, the Fountain of Youth one.
And they become younger?
Yeah. When they first put Professor Farnsworth in the mud thing and it's not working and they pull him out after a second, and Fry goes, he still looks kind of old, kind of real old. Like stuff like that. Like just weird stuff that people say. With Kevin Smith, there's this audience where people enjoy it because it's very subversive, and
it's really, really subversive.
The dialogue is. Anymore it's not, because everything that's coming out these days is post Clerks, and the first Clerks had some of the most horrific dialogue in it than anything you ever hear, and you don't even hear people usually talking in real life about that. Guys don't just sit around in their car talking about bodily functions and you know, trying to fillet themselves and dying doing it, And I guess you got to give them credit for coming up with stuff like that, which some is kind of hard to say. I
mean, some of it was authentic. Like, you know, people would talk about, like, the value of, you know, the Death Star.
Oh, sure,
just
sure.
Feel bad about those construction workers in the second.
But now there's so much pop culture referencing in pop
back
culture
then it was
itself.
New.
Yeah.
In Clerks, Clerks, I enjoyed a decent bit.
I liked it the first time I saw it. I don't. Since then, I really see a lot of the problems with it. But everyone I know loves Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, and I thought that, like, two parts in that whole movie were funny.
Yeah, I mean, there was like just like a steady stream of gay jokes, but I don't know. Me and my brother always like to make the George Carlin joke. If you don't make with the head. There was bits and pieces there.
I think at times he's very funny, and then other times I think he just tries too hard. But
that's true.
I don't know. It's kind of not for me to say, since I really have no sort of – I have nothing to back myself up like I'm some great judge of
comedic.
Subjectively, I don't like Kevin Smith.
Well, yeah, but you can apply, like, well, why? You know, you think that it gets derivative of itself and that maybe gets a little tired and the dialogue is kind of inauthentic and so – and the pop culture references maybe.
Yeah, and it's kind of hard to diss somebody for talking about, you know, when that's all we're doing right here is repeatedly mentioning stuff.
All we're doing is pop culture references.
But that's another problem with Family Guy is that it's now become – just the whole thing is like South Park made fun of us.
Yeah, South Park, they stuck the landing, which is what they needed
to dolphins,
do.
The dolphins taking –
the manatees.
Manatees with the ping pong balls or whatever
balls.
It was. Yeah, idea balls. That,
if an idea ball comes around.
What was the one they came up with the first time they showed him? It was like
– oh, it was something about Gary Coleman and –
and then they push a button and Peter says it.
Yeah.
That's like the time that Gary Coleman and I
exactly.
Free jumped off
no,
of the face.
South Park stuck the landing there, and I don't know. I hope that they can pick it up with this season, but they might need a longer break, or they might, dare I say it, be done.
Maybe
it's
they're
better
done.
If
Maybe
I lose faith in them.
Well, the thing is,
and then they can come back and more awesome.
Exactly. I don't think that they're ever going to. The thing is, they considering how many episodes per season are about something that just recently happened in the news, they're never going to run out of ideas.
But the thing is, can they do them cleverly, or do they, the news
The one
itself,
last night seemed like a retread.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's right. It starts to get into retreads because the news starts doing the retreads. And it's like, let's see. Do we want to make fun of the Anna Nicole thing? Let's see. It's about a celebrity. The celebrity died, and the news was just voracious and jackal-like and awful. And we kind of did that already with the one about Terry Schiavo.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, the people just being disgusting. So I can see where that kind of cynicism can almost needs a break or something.
Right.
And they've hit so many other topics with such great episodes, or doubled down. They doubled down on a lot of topics sometimes. You know, like they did the one about the Indian casino.
Yeah.
They also, like, talked about SARS.
Yeah, right.
And, like, the scare of SARS. It's like, here, it's chicken soup.
Well, there's only so many races to make fun of, so you have
exactly.
to, you know, you have to redo them eventually.
And stuff.
They're going to start talking about the Bosnians or something soon.
Or get too obscure. I did feel like I barely caught the reference to. I didn't at first. I'm like, well, why is Cartman dressed differently in the new one?
Oh, The Thing. I got that immediately. That's one of my favorite movies.
I got it pretty quickly. I'm like, that's from The Thing.
That was the only part of the movie of the show last night that I actually enjoyed, because that's my favorite like horror film.
Everybody's
one of the first
movie
I've ever owned.
And I like Kurt Russell, and I want to like John Carpenter more.
I probably do.
I just don't.
I used to hate him.
Movies.
I used to hate him. And if you want to get into, I think, I don't know, if you don't like The Thing, it's going to be hard, because that's
really...
No,
I like The Thing. Okay, I just haven't seen it in a long time.
That's really unlike most of his other stuff. Usually he's...
No, it's a remake, yeah.
Yeah, it definitely is. But the way it's directed, it's like somebody else made it. If you see his original, The Fog...
I've seen bits of that, yeah.
And, gosh, even like Ghosts of Mars or something like that. The way he shoots in this really strange way that's like... It's almost like it's a play.
Mm-hmm.
It's like on a stage. You see this lit area, and then it's black behind it. And, like, so much of his stuff is like that. Like, all that exists is what's in front of the camera. And it's almost like a play.
Then he can, like, do it cheaper almost.
And,
you know, Escape from L.A. or something.
Yeah,
where it's kind of, that section is where the action's going to happen. So.
Right, and his unique kind of music that he adds to it, which
is
all him.
John Carpenter,
really,
like,
strange.
Fucking around on
keyboard,
essentially.
Not like that, but, you know, that he adds to it. And the fact that the dialogue is always so strange, so weird, and there's a lot of memorable lines in movies like They Live. Have you seen that one? Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Roddy. Well,
yeah.
And they parodied that on South Park, too, but they didn't tell you that that was what they parodied. And in South Park last night...
They did.
I think
because maybe they had a problem with the They Live thing. They might have thought that people didn't get that
one. Yeah, but that's what's fine. If people don't get it, they eventually get it, and then it's funny. Or the people that do get it are like, yeah, that's cool, but when you tell the people that you're doing the reference, it's like telling them the joke. It's like, see, the joke is funny because. And I'm like, come on, South Park. You guys know you don't need to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I barely got, like, okay, first of all, with the thing with the eye and the music, was that supposed to be like an Apocalypto reference? I thought that was going to be, the whole parody was going to be Apocalypto for the lice. But I haven't seen that movie.
No,
so
it wasn't.
I hadn't seen that, so I thought, oh, no, I'm going to not get this.
But that might have been a reference to something.
But
I
hope they wouldn't explain it to me that that's what it is, you know?
Yeah, South, there's, you know, for the most part, I think that's a fantastic show. And there's certain times when it just, you know, kind of lets you down a little bit and you get a little bit depressed.
Well, the way I describe it is it's usually 7 or 8 episodes a season, and usually 3 of them are kind of, you know, meh, they're kind of all right. 3 of them are pretty good, and then, like, you know, 1 or 2, if it's 8 or whatever, are really good.
Yeah.
And
I think it's been that way all the way through, because there were some first and second season episodes that were
really lame.
Well,
they talked
about
that. Like, they kind of felt like that they got their success, and then they didn't take it as seriously, and so they kind of weren't doing as good a stuff in, like, the couple, you know, the, I don't know.
I think their original idea ones, though, are some of my favorite ones. The ones where they make fun of things are usually pretty funny and timely and so forth, but the episodes like Scott Tenorman Must Die.
That was good.
I absolutely love when they just come up with off-the-wall stuff like that, where basically anything where Cartman is really featured, and, I mean, he's got to be the most evil, worst person in all of television or filmdom or anything. The Awesome-O one where he plays a robot.
That was funny.
I don't know.
He comes up with all the film ideas.
Just
and
great.
Adam Sandler. And last night before the new one was the one from, like, maybe just last season, or maybe it was older than that one season before. It was the ginger kid one where South Park's talking about, like, trying to build new racism against, like, you know, 40 kids that are, you know, red-haired. And then they make him one, and then he leads a revolt.
What are your favorite characters on that show?
Let's see. Okay, my favorite character on South Park, and he hasn't been in it a long time, is Alphonse Mephisto. And they had him in there for, like, so many episodes. Like, he was literally in it for, like, 2 seasons straight. Like, every episode they found a way to, like, work him into it. And then they just, like, he disappeared. it was right after the NAMBLA one.
Yeah.
And he disappeared. Yeah. And I'm like, that guy, I don't know, I just really got a kick out of Mephisto. Because they would cut to, like, the lightning and yeah. like, his lab. And it just seemed like it was, like, they were having fun doing that.
Right.
Like, having, like, oh, let's have this crazy old scientist.
I think that, I, of course, Cartman, but I really like Butters for some reason.
I like,
really
Butters, like Butters, too. I just think that sometimes they beat up on him too much and they make him too pathetic. And it's like, you want to kind of root for Butters a little, but then he's just too pathetic to even root
I like for. How in a lot of the episodes that base around him, there's a lot of different music that's really out of place in the show. The one where he had the dancing accident and killed all the people with the tap dancing, the song they play when he goes and when they show the flashback of his thing was called
"I've
Got Something in My Front Pocket." I wrote something in my front pocket for you.
Yeah. I love that.
And that one, and the fact that a lot of times they have him sing his own songs.
Yeah.
And
got some apples. Got some too.
There was a song in that Osmo one that was pretty funny too. But
oh yeah, my robot friend.
Yeah, my robot friend. Yeah.
Yeah, those are funny.
They have Cartman do some pretty ones too. The one where I think Cartman sang the song "My Best Friend," me and my best friend hanging around.
Oh yeah, no. He sang that song when it was evil Cartman, so he was good and he had the goatee.
That's right.
And I used to sing that to my college roommates. I'd be like, "You guys are my best friend. We'll always be together, just palling around."
Yeah, that was great.
So they'd be all pissed off about be doing something, and I'd be sitting in the back of the car half drunk, being like, "Yee, guys, my best friend."
Oh man,
just paddling around.
We're going off the subject. I don't know. I don't remember what the subject was, so it's probably fine.
We've connected it all. I think that's the real genius of our podcast, is we're able to connect everything.
Genius.
I can connect Ferris Bueller back to.
I dare anyone to sit all the way through without turning it off.
Back to Swords. Oh, it's not as. I sat through the home movies commentary. That's like 10 minutes of them just going, "It's time to pay the price," because that was the name of the episode.
Right.
That show was funny. I don't know if you've seen that show.
I never got into it.
You just didn't like it.
I didn't like it. I didn't see the humor in it. I didn't see it.
Maybe the McGurk stuff, but I don't know. But season 2, it got a little more solid. But anyway, so I sat through that, and I felt like I got a gold star for that. But
well, good job. Way to go.
Yeah, way to not have a normal life that I'm willing to sit through. But I could connect Sword and Sorcerer to
do it.
To Ferris Bueller if you want.
Go easily. For it.
Okay. With no
Is
degrees.
This like a six degrees
no,
of Ferris
it's with,
Bueller?
It's with like no degree.
All right.
Okay, Ferris Bueller's girlfriend was Mia Sara. Mia Sara played the princess in Legend, which was the Ridley Scott.
But more importantly, she was naked in Time Cop.
Oh, that's right. Not fully naked, though.
Upper frontal.
It worked for us when we were
upper
kids.
Upper frontal,
but
lower rear, I think.
Indeed. That's right. I remember that now. Back when DVDs weren't around.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have a hard time saying that Legend is in one of those movies. I
you don't call it a sword and sorcerer? It had swords. No. It had monsters and craziness. And
yeah, but it was just so strange.
Fantasticalness. You mean because of the Tangerine Dream soundtrack?
No, not just that. I grew up kind of listening to Tangerine Dream because my uncle was a huge fan of theirs. And
weird.
Yeah, I know. It's not something I like to talk about. No, but it was back before Ridley Scott really found...
Well, he, like, did one of each, and then he kind of decided to become, like, I'm just going to be a director.
Yeah, yeah. And at that point, you know, and actually I kind of respected more of the earlier stuff because
me too.
What he did with Alien and Blade Runner was completely fantastic.
Yeah, Alien, Blade Runner, and then Legend, and he's done, like, one of every of those kind of cool genres, and he did them all well, and they were all their own thing. I mean, that'd be a cool marathon to do. Though, I don't know, Blade Runner is such an awesome movie on its own. It's kind
actually,
of hard to
there, do there's, with yeah, it. There's something else that'll tie this all together here, which is the fact that parts of Gladiator, namely the parts where, you've seen it, I'm not going to give anything away here, but he dies at the end.
Oh, no.
So I gave away the whole point. Have you ever seen The Sixth Sense? He's actually dead.
Yeah, that was a cop-out, because he changed clothes.
Yeah, right.
I always thought that. You know, wait a minute. Right. He puts on, like, his college sweater at one point. That's ridiculous.
In The Crying Game, the girl's actually a guy. I'm sorry, I'm spoiling everything here today. So the thing about the Gladiator is that it's got this stuff where he keeps having this dream of these fields of wheat and then seeing his wife and his kid.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so 300 blatantly rips that off.
What's the whole? It's the whole wife thing, right?
Yeah, it is, and they very literally have this when Leonidas is ailing toward the end of it. he has this vision of seeing his wife and his kid in the wheat, and it looks almost exactly the same, except for the fact that there's this big fake CGI background splash across, you know, with a red sunset or whatever. And that part of 300, I did not like.
It just drew you out, and you said, "Oh, that's
no." I just thought that. I mean, as soon as I saw it, I was like, "Gladiator," and I was sitting. There was all these people who were watching the film around me, and I heard a couple of people go, "Gladiator, Gladiator," that did kind of draw people out of it, I think. So here's my little mini review of the movie. It is, if you enjoy being entertained, and you like movies that are sheer spectacle, it is great.
That's what I would imagine.
It is great. Yeah. I've heard a lot of criticism of it that actually. Kind of the criticism that you mostly will hear is going to skip Zack Snyder, because it's not quite the Sin City type thing, but he's almost using frame for frame, yeah. You know, panel for panel, Frank Miller's stuff. They add a subplot with his wife back home.
And I would have to,
dealing with the Senate, that sort of thing. Other than that, it's very, very. Straight adaptation of Frank Miller's thing,
which is really just about one big fight. That's an awesome fight.
Even
the comic book.
Yeah, they break it up into tinier little battles and stuff. And you know, there's betrayal and there's a focus on manhood and so forth. Yeah. But I've heard a lot of people say like there's problems with the fact that it is straight black and white, good or evil. Either you're a free man who's brave, or you're someone who wants to enslave people and
You're a Spartan. Yeah.
And they're blaming the movie for this, when this is exactly how Frank Miller wrote it. It's exactly.
Yeah, I mean,
how
I've read the first three of them, and it's like, wait, he just kicks that guy
down a hole.
And it's basically just like, no, they're being really like. I mean, I'm no diplomatic pussy. Let me just say that right now. No, you step on my foot, then I'm going to break your leg, because you know now you're not going to step on my foot anymore.
Yeah.
But it's like it seems a little too melodramatic, I guess, in this, even in the Frank Miller stuff. When I'm like, come on, Frank, can't you be a little more complex here? The guy says, well,
it's not complex. That's the thing.
We need a piece of your dirt to verify the grandness of Xerxes, our king, that you are dominant, you know, submissive to him.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, yeah, I'm not. Well, so I kill you.
And the thing is, and people are blaming Zack Snyder for this. And there's this whole thing now with Iran, this movie was government funded. When I got to tell you that most government people, I mean, considering how anti-Hollywood, anti-violence,
that's always really funny too.
Yeah,
because a lot of it will end up being like, you know, conservative people. If you like watch an episode of South Park, you'd probably agree with like 80% of it.
Right, right. Well, the thing is, I mean, a lot of the anti-violence stuff is liberal, a really liberal thing. It's the Tipper Gore, Joe Lieberman thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that I don't know if they've had any sort of outcry about this movie, but. People are saying, you know, this was government funded, and it's strange that this movie was released during this whole thing. And
it's just like everything. It's the whole stupid propaganda issue, like everyone was saying about the episode 3 of Star Wars, that it was all anti-Bush, and you know, Bush is supposed to be like the emperor. And I'm like, you know what? If Gore had got elected, that movie would have had the same ending. So no, you read.
Except for the emperor would have told everyone that to be careful with their lightsabers because they were heating up the earth.
Exactly.
Don't only leave them on for three or four seconds at a time.
We've got like five or six planets that we can live on. So,
yeah, that's true. So I recommend the movie. I think it's definitely worth watching. There's the only problems I really had besides that whole Gladiator thing was the dialogue is terrible.
Yeah, it looks
no
like,
big deal.
It looks like I mean I'm reading the Frank Miller stuff and there's no big speeches yet. But I mean, it sounds like that there is a lot in the movie, maybe like.
There's a
lot
all speeches.
Of telling how you are, you know, like I'm tough, so this is why.
There's.
Is it short? The movie?
No, it's an hour and 45.
Really?
Almost.
Because I mean, like I read through the first three comic books in like almost no time.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess they add, and it's
not exact, but it's pretty close.
They complicate some of it.
Yeah, there's a couple of characters are combined, or actually they split apart a couple of characters from the comics to make it longer. But there's some of the dialogue is just so stilted, to use that word. It's just the idea that Frank Miller's dialogue is usually not good for movies. It worked for Sin City because it's supposed to be a noir type thing, and noir dialogue is meant to be
It's a stylized thing. Like if you saw Brick, the one about the
High
school kids.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
I liked that movie.
And this has very similar dialogue, except for it's, you know, it's like set in that different time. So I think that maybe Frank Miller just has a thing with dialogue like that. Did you see Idiocracy?
Yeah.
Okay. I think that it's going to be the exact opposite in our world, that it's not going to be because the smart people refuse to breed. It's going to just going to be that everyone who in the future, it's all going to be, we have all read comic books instead of Madame Bovary. No, it's not true. I don't know. But Madame Bovary was pretty hard to sit through. I was an English major.
Through? Like, yeah. You listen? Yeah. Well, everyone's listening to books now, too.
Yeah, no, I didn't do that. I should have done that. I could have gone on a road trip and listened to Madame Bovary the whole time on tape, book on tape.
But here, to think about this, though. Everybody writes books nowadays, though. I mean, but it's all shit, I guess. I mean, it's like, oh, now he's going to write a book because he was Scott Peterson juror. Okay.
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah, but I mean, if you're talking about fiction.
Yeah.
Fiction, or, I mean, not that the...
The printed word isn't entirely dead yet.
Yeah. This actually, this one you were looking at earlier.
House of Leaves.
This is it's incredible. I'm actually finding it hard to get through because it's so.
It looks pretty thick.
Chopped up, but it's this was so highly anticipated and lauded for. They say it's changing the way books are written
because of the author.
No, this is first book, Mark Z. Danielewski.
Well, then why would someone care?
Because look at this.
Oh, it's doing.
And he's got
meta shit.
And he's got half of the pages are. Footnotes written by this guy who supposedly found this manuscript by this blind guy who supposedly.
So it's definitely a metafiction.
But it's crazy. This is it's
I,
so
I
much.
I came up with an idea about that one time when metafiction was. One of my roommates was taking a metafiction course, and I thought of writing something out and then doing it like someone found the transcripts of that, and then.
Yeah, it's
not that it was very interesting. I think it's kind of a cop out on just being able to have actual.
Well, the story is really good, though. I mean, it's really creepy. I was told this by a friend of mine who's kind of
what do you do? Do you just skip the end notes?
No. You read it all. I mean, you can choose to read it any way you want.
Chronologically, though.
Yeah,
but it doesn't break the narrative to read the.
No,
end notes
it does actually. It's not really. Like if you get down to this part and then you read this, that's an editor note. But there's
Paradise Lost.
There's points when this guy who's. So this is the thing that he's adapting, but he went to this dead guy's apartment and found this manuscript, and he's publishing it for this guy because it was the guy's life dream. He stops in parts, and then his own footnotes are his own story about his own life, and those go on like this.
But are those like relevant? Are they like, you know, I had to go get a pack of gum and I forgot?
No, they're totally, that all ties in. And
weird.
There's like three appendices in the back of it. That have to do with both people's lives.
Some kind of bureaucracy going on in the
it's
book.
It's really strange.
Like
the book itself was. I was told this about one of my friends who's kind of a hipster who's like really into kind of lofty things that people would be reading in Silver Lake in a diner. And
metafiction type. So whatever's the big hipster stuff, you know. So it means it's bands that are probably not that actually good. You know, it's White Stripes and
right.
Exists.
But this is very good. It's just super like highly.
It's dense.
The premise is this: is that. These people found this house that they moved into. One day, the father was measuring the inside of the house, and he noticed because they were going to put some certain furniture in there, and he noticed that the inside measurement of the house was a quarter of an inch longer than the outside of the house.
So it's some kind of weird that can't happen.
And then they find a hallway. A door disappears one day, and there it just goes on into black. And they end up, people come and, like, it turns into this, like, national thing. The thing is...
Wait, so it's not this kind of thing where then the rest of the world doesn't let in on it?
Here's the thing.
Stuff exists.
This whole story is told because supposedly this was all on tape, and there's this famous movie, this documentary called The Navidson Record. And this is all told by this dead guy's manuscript. But the guy who finds the manuscript has never heard of this thing. It doesn't exist. But this thing starts affecting the guy who found it. It's kind of complicated. Oh, but
it sounds really complicated.
It's very, very interesting.
It kind of sounds like it relates to what I was talking about on the first podcast about being too old for some of this stuff, where it's like, you know, I want my book to just be the story that's in the book and not 10 stories that break itself apart and have to reference each other. But, I mean, if it's your thing, it might be interesting. Hey, I might get a kick out of it if it wasn't so damn lazy. That's really what it is.
Yeah, it's rough to read at points. There's a... This guy's mother wrote him letters from a mental institution, and one of them is you have to read the first letter of each word to see what she's actually saying to him. And it's about how she was, like, raped by the attendants and stuff. And it's really creepy. The book is very creepy. This guy's second book that he just came out with it's about these two immortal kids who have been living through time and are searching for something.
Since when, though?
Since, like, the 1600s maybe later. I'm probably screwing this up. But anyway, reading it this way, it's the one guy's story. You flip it around and read it this way, and it's the other guy's story. And, like, he has these gimmicky things that he does, but...
Yeah, the gimmicks, like that to me sounds like...
But people are praising it, because it's, like, they say it's changing the way... It's making it more user... You know, the user has to...
Yeah, it's more interactive.
Active. Exactly, yeah.
It's like choose-your-own-adventure books. Yeah, remember those kids?
It's a choose-your-own-adventure book. With rape and murder and...
That's the best kind of adventure.
This guy's sister is you hear the art musician Poe?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's his sister. And actually the song Hey Pretty that had talking in it. You ever hear that one? It was him reading passages from this book before the book came out. Her second to last album was tied into this. They were released at the same time and no one knew about this. But her album was about
The Immortal Kids.
Was about this book, House of Leaves. And he references, like, her as a musician and stuff in here, too. It's really strange.
Weird.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, back to the cross-referencing. It's cool. I just am such a continuity junkie that I would have to devour everything if I was going to get into it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'd know, okay, and then I'd have to become a fan of this musician. I'd have to listen to a lot of her stuff. And then I'd have to backpedal on stuff this guy wrote. And then read this. And then after 6 months of investment...
I forgot to mention that every time the word house is mentioned anywhere in the book, the cover, the jacket, it's blue. In this version, it's blue. There's an addition to see, like, their houses, house. In different languages, it's blue also. Other versions have it in black. Some have it in, like bold. Some have it in red. There's different versions with different appendices. You can buy one of the appendix separately.
Gosh, see, maybe that makes the money back because people care about that. But, I mean, obviously, if you're doing some gimmick where you're adding blue to everything on every page, that's different ink. Publishing-wise, that raises the cost to publish the book.
Well, look at this. Look how many trees they had to cut down.
Exactly. That's a lot of trees.
It's great, though, man.
Minimalism is big.
I'm telling you, if you ever want to read something that's better than The Red Badge of Courage, I don't know if it's better, actually. I'm not going to say that.
Well, I couldn't finish that. Or I did, and it just was, like, kind of tiresome. Right. I don't know. It just read weird.
Well,
you had to figure out how to go with it. 4:30.
It's time to wrap this up here.
Yeah, I think it's time to wrap this up.
So, next time we'll talk about something very close to your heart. No, it's not, but mine. I really hope we can talk about 80s action films because
absolutely.
That is the most important thing to me in all of entertainment.
Well, we'll just do that, and then we'll only have 3 podcasts.
Cool.
And then we'll be done.
That's it.
No, I do.
The first series, and then we'll come back in 4 years and do another series.
Yeah, well, I'll be older. No, I don't know. At some point, for some reason, I want to have I want to do at least 86 because I want to celebrate the 86th one. I don't know why. I feel like this is podcast 86.